My story isn't crazy long, but it's one of the wildest things that's ever happened to me. I still think about it now and how close I came to getting ripped off by people I thought were my friends, so here we go. It was a Friday night a few years back. I was supposed to go out with Ethan, Marcus, and a few other buddies. Just some bar hopping, nothing major. But that afternoon, I got hit with something nasty. Fever, chills, full body sweats. My stomach twisted itself into knots, and the thought of even standing up, let alone drinking, made me want to puke on the spot. I shot Ethan a text and told him I'm out for the night. He hit me back with a laughing emoji, called me soft. I told him to have a drink for me and crashed on my couch, with Netflix playing in the background. I must have dozed off because the next time I looked at my phone, it was well past midnight. My fever had eased up a little bit, but my body still felt wrung out. The TV flickered in the dark, some show playing I can't even remember putting on. I barely even had the energy to sit up, so I just let my eyes unfocus, sinking in and half out of sleep. And then I heard this metallic scrape. At first, I thought it was the TV, some weird sound effect, but when I turned the volume down, I heard it again. And this time, it was followed by whispering outside. My body went rigid, whispering. Low, hushed voices just outside my door. My mind quickly scrambled for some kind of explanation. Was it the neighbors or maybe drunk kids messing around? But then I heard that metallic scrape again, but it was longer this time, like something being dragged across my lock. My stomach quickly turned to ice. I slid off the couch, moving slowly and carefully. The TV cast just enough light to keep me from tripping as I crept towards the front room. I pressed my back against the wall near the window, took a deep breath, and then just barely peeked through the side of the curtain. Two men, dressed in dark clothes, both wearing ski masks. One was hunched over my front door, working at the lock with something thin and metallic, a lockpick. The other stood a few feet back, glancing around, shifting from foot to foot like he was really nervous. My throat locked up immediately. This ain't a prank. This is real. I stumbled back from the window and fumbled for my phone. My hands were slick with sweat as I unlocked it and dialed 911. The dispatcher answered, voice steady and professional.
911, what's your emergency?
There's two guys outside my house. I swallowed hard. They're trying to break in.
Can you confirm your address, sir?
I gave it to her, whispering. My body felt electric. Every nerve on edge.
Where are they in the house?
Front room. I can see them through the window. I don't think they know I'm home.
Stay quiet. Officers are en route.
I peered back through the curtain, breathing barely. The guy at the door continued to jiggle the knob, muttering something. I could just make out his voice now, rough and impatient. But at the same time, it was familiar. A sick feeling crawled up my spine. I knew that voice. I told the dispatcher, barely even believing my own words. I think I know one of them. There was a pause on the other end.
You recognize him?
I mean, I can't see his face, but his voice? My mouth went dry. Yeah. Yeah, I do.
Were you supposed to be out tonight, sir?
That question hit me like a slap. I blinked, my brain working slower than it probably should have been. Yeah, I whispered. I was supposed to be out tonight. The dispatcher's tone then sharpened.
It's not uncommon for burglars to plan jobs based on when they know somebody won't be home. You may have been targeted by somebody you know.
A cold weight then settled in my gut. I stared at the guy at the door, his build, his movements, the way he was shifting when he got frustrated. Every part of him was screaming something I didn't want to believe. Ethan. That realization made my skin crawl. My friend? A guy I was supposed to be out drinking with. He thought I wasn't home. He thought my house was empty. The dispatcher kept talking, telling me to stay on the line, but I wasn't listening. I hung up and called Ethan. Outside, I saw his phone light up in his pocket. He froze. The other guy just looked at him, confused. Ethan hesitated and stared at his phone for a second. Then, instead of answering, he sent it to voicemail. My stomach twisted and I called again. This time he didn't even check, just let it ring. I swallowed down the fear and that rage bubbling up underneath my skin. I typed out a text with shaking fingers. I'm home and I can see you. Ethan checked his phone and stared at the screen, and then bolted. I watched him and the other guy sprint down the street, their dark figures vanishing into the night. But they didn't make it far. The second they hit the driveway, red and blue lights flashed and sirens ripped out through the air. The cops were already here. The moment the sirens hit, Ethan and his accomplice skidded to a stop, and for a split second, they looked at one another, then bolted in opposite directions. It didn't matter though, the cops were already fanning out, voices barking commands. Hands where I can see them! Down on the ground now! Ethan hesitated just for a second, then dropped to his knees, hands in the air. His friend wasn't as smart. He made it halfway across my neighbor's yard before two officers tackled him hard into the grass. I stood there frozen at my window, watching it all unfold. It really didn't feel real. The same guy I shared drinks with, laughs with, confided in, was now cuffed, face down on the pavement. A few moments later, the officers knocked on my door. I let him in, and my legs were still feeling like they weren't attached to my body. I gave my statement and recounted everything that I saw. The whole time, my voice was distant, like I was telling somebody else's story. It turns out Ethan and his buddy weren't first-timers. They were tied to a string of break-ins across the town. Small stuff mostly, electronics, cash, anything they could flip quick. He'd been robbing houses for months and months now, including mine apparently. The reality of it all didn't hit me until after the cops left and my house was quiet again. I locked the door, double-checked the windows, and then sat in the dark staring at my phone. I don't really know what I was waiting for. A follow-up for the police or my friends, really anything, but nobody reached out. I sat up for most of the night totally perplexed, half paranoid. It was a really weird feeling. I ended up just taking more cold and flu medicine and forced myself to pass back out. Over the next few weeks, I distanced myself from some of the more sketchy friends I'd made over the years and got all the info I could on Ethan. He went away for a few months, maybe a year, but he's out and about again. He even tried apologizing to me, but I still don't talk to him. Folks like that definitely aren't worth the trouble. I didn't think twice about that night when it started. It was just one of those evenings, that same routine that I'd done 100 times before. I got off work early. One of those rare miracles that really didn't happen very often, but I didn't question it. Picked up Darcy from the babysitter, buckled her up into the car seat while she babbled along about the cool stuff that she did that day. The usual. The house was dark when I got home, the late autumn chill creeping in. Darcy clung to her stuffed rabbit as I carried her inside, kicking the door shut behind us. The house smelled like garbage, adding to the list of stuff I needed to get done. I flicked on the lights and sat her down, and shrugged off my coat. I was just about to start dinner when my phone buzzed. Hey, I'm gonna be late at least another hour. Of course. I sighed, stuffing my phone back into my pocket. That left me alone with Darcy, longer than expected. I guess not a big deal, but I was already tired. I just needed to get the house together. Okay, kiddo, I said, scooping her up. Let's get you set up so mommy can get rolling. I plopped her in front of the living room with a sippy cup and her toys, turning on something animated to keep her occupied. She giggled, completely unaware that my energy was running on fumes. The kitchen was cold, even with the oven on. I moved throughout the motions, chopping vegetables and setting water to boil. That kind of mindless task that you do on autopilot. My phone buzzed again, another text from Tyler. As I typed out a reply, I heard something from the living room, this soft thump. I thought for a second, maybe I dropped a package of pork chops on the floor. No, they were still on the counter. Okay, well, maybe Darcy knocks something over, one of her toys. But then a few seconds later, I heard something else, something closer to a jingle. I turned my head, frowning. All right, something's off. I stood there for a moment, knife still in hand, trying to listen past the sound of boiling water. The house went back to quiet again. No thumps, no jingling. Maybe I imagined it. I shook my head and went back to chopping. Pulse just a little quicker now. Tyler texted me again. I'm sorry, I'm ready to be home. What's for dinner? I started typing back when another sound reached me. Not a thump this time, this kind of whoosh, like air moving where it shouldn't be. I turned my head towards the living room. A breeze? I could feel it now drifting into the kitchen, sending a cold draft across the back of my neck. I dropped my phone. The front door was open, wide open. The next second was pure electric panic. My stomach flipped. I ran, nearly knocking over a chair. Darcy? My voice cracked as I burst into the living room. Empty. The sippy cup was on its side, dripping milk into the carpet. Her stuffed rabbit lay abandoned near the couch. The front door gaped open to the night, a dark mouth swallowing up my child. I ran to the threshold, heart slamming, eyes darting across the yard. The porch light wasn't even on. Pure black and no Darcy. My brain couldn't perceive or process it. One second she was there and the next, gone. I staggered out into the porch barefoot, cold slapping at my legs. I screamed her name into the night. Darcy, baby, where are you? No answer. I ran down the steps and scanned the yard, the driveway, the sidewalk. My pulse was roaring in my ears. Could she have gone toward the street, the backyard? My mind raced through every horrible possibility. And then I heard movement, a rustle from beneath the porch. I spun, breath sharp in my throat. I dropped to my hands and knees, peering through the lattice work. There she was. Darcy crouched against the foundation, wide-eyed and silent. Her tiny hands clutched her shirt, but she wasn't crying, just staring. Baby, I gasped out. My voice was shaking. Come here, come to mommy. She didn't move. I reached for her, trying to stay calm, but then I saw it, the thing in the shadows just a foot away from her. A skunk. Its black and white shape curled tight, tail raised, nose twitching as it watched me with these beady little eyes. The pulse slammed harder. Darcy was trapped. One move from getting sprayed, or even worse, bitten. My hands curled into fists, and I forced myself to breathe. Panic would not help. Darcy, sweetheart, I whispered. Don't move, okay? Just stay still. She just blinked at me, as if waiting for my next move. I twisted around, hearing footsteps, chest seizing up. It was Tyler, jogging up the driveway, confusion written all over his face. Jesus, what the hell's going on? He panted out, and somehow I didn't hear him pull up to the house. I pointed under the porch. It's Darcy, she's stuck and there's a... The skunk shifted, and my breath caught. Don't startle it, I hissed to him. Tyler crouched beside me, peering into the darkness. Shit. Slowly, he straightened up and reached into his coat pocket, pulled out his keys. I didn't know what he was doing until he aimed, pressed the button, and set off the car alarm. That blaring sound shattered the quiet. The skunk flinched, and its tails flicked up and then gone. A streak of black and white, shooting out from underneath the porch, vanishing into the bushes. Darcy then let out this startled little yelp, and that's all I needed. I lunged forward and grabbed her and yanked her in my arms, stumbling backwards into the grass. She clung to me, her tiny body trembling. I pressed my lips to her hair, whispering, "You scared me so bad, baby." My whole body felt like it had been hollowed out, shaking with the leftover adrenaline. Tyler bent down and checked her face and her arms. "She okay?" I nodded. "I think so." Then that smell hit me, something burning. Tyler's eyes went wide. Dinner. I turned and stared through the open door, smoke curling from the kitchen. The pot on the stove, whatever I was cooking, was now in flames. We ran inside. Tyler grabbed the fire extinguisher from under the sink while I yanked that smoking pot off the burner. My hands were shaking so hard that I almost dropped it. Flames hissed and died as Tyler let out a blast of white foam, coating the stove, the counter, and half the floor. Smoke curled toward the ceiling, that smell of burned food filling up the house. For a second, nobody spoke. We just stood there panting, Darcy still clinging to my hip. And Tyler let out this short, breathless laugh. Whew. Hell of a night. I wanted to laugh too, but it didn't come. My body was still buzzing from the panic of losing Darcy, from that skunk, from nearly setting our house on fire. I turned and pressed my forehead to Darcy's soft curls, inhaling her scent, that baby shampoo and sweat. We need to check her, I murmured. Make sure she didn't get bitten. Tyler nodded and reached out to brush a hand over her back. No scratches, no blood. We still stripped her down and tossed her into the bath, just to be safe. She was sleepy now, the whole ordeal already fading in her little mind. By the time we got her dried off and into the pajamas, she was nodding off in my arms. I sat with her in the rocking chair, staring out the window into the dark yard, my pulse finally slowing down. Tyler walked up behind me, resting a hand on my shoulder. It's okay now. I nodded, but deep down I knew. Those 30 minutes were the longest, most terrifying of my entire life. And thank God Tyler just happened to get home a little earlier than expected. Never left that door unlocked again, I'll tell you that.
I've been hiking for a few years now, and one evening I went hiking on a trail I've done before, which I considered my favorite. It's well known for its beautiful views, and I had planned on a simple evening hike. I wasn't expecting it to take too long, so I didn't bring much, just water, a few snacks, and my phone. As the evening went on, the weather turned cooler. The sun was dipping lower in the sky, and I knew it would be getting dark soon. I had planned to stick to the main path, but I decided to take a shortcut that would get me back to the car a little faster. I'd done it before without issue. This time, though, the shortcut led me into unfamiliar terrain. The woods were denser here, daylight was fading quickly, and I had to have made a wrong turn or missed a turn at some point. At first, I didn't panic because I thought I could still find my way, but as I kept walking, I realized I didn't recognize anything. The path was barely a trail now, just some faint markings in the dirt that I could barely follow. My phone had no signal, and when I tried calling for help, it just showed that dreaded no service message. It was already getting darker, and I wasn't sure where I was anymore. Right as it was getting dark, I saw an old shack up ahead of me. It looked abandoned, like it hadn't been used in years, but it also didn't look like it had fallen apart. The door was slightly open, and nobody was inside, so I decided to go in. It seemed like a strange thing to find out here, but at that point, I didn't have many options. I figured I could use it for shelter for the night until morning when I could see the woods better. The shack was small, with old wooden walls. There were some broken furniture, a dusty table, and a few old crates scattered around on the carpet that covered the ground. It wasn't much, but it was better than sitting outside in the dark. I locked the door behind me and settled into the corner with my bag as a pillow, lying on top of the carpet so that I had at least a little padding. Around midnight, I began hearing noises. It was faint, but there were noises now and then coming from below the shack. At first, I thought an animal had made its home under the shack, but as the night went on, I heard a lot of different noises. Some louder scrapes, or just overall rustling around. I was confused, but tried to ignore the faint noises as I drifted in and out of sleep throughout the night. It all came together for me when suddenly I heard loud steps ascending towards me in the middle of the night. There was a lower level below me, like a bunker in the ground. As the steps worked their way towards me, I felt a slight push below. I realized I was laying right over the entrance to down below, which must have been a trap door below the carpet that I was laying on. I shouted out, "Hello," kind of out of instinct, and didn't know what else to do. Whoever was below me trying to open the door frantically ran back down the stairs. A few moments later, I heard someone scrambling away into the woods, making a lot of noise as they went. I was a little worried that the person might come back, but I wasn't going to find the trail in the middle of the night, so I stayed. I spent the rest of the night huddled up in the shack, hoping that the morning would come soon. In the morning, before I left the shack, I tried to open the trap door below the carpet, but it was locked, and I couldn't find any other entrance to the bunker below me. There had to be another entrance because whoever was down there had taken off into the woods earlier that night from a different exit, but it was well hidden because I didn't see it. I made my way back to the hiking trail easily. It was easier to figure out where I was going in the daylight, and after a few hours, I was back at the parking lot. I immediately reported what I found to the authorities, but when they asked for the details on the location, I couldn't give them an exact spot. The area was so far off the main trail, and I didn't really know where it was. I don't know if the authorities ever even looked for the shack and bunker, or if they ever found it. Maybe they didn't take me seriously, or figured it was nothing to worry about. To this day, though, I question myself why someone needed a hidden bunker below an old wooden shack in the middle of the woods for. It must have been some sort of extreme doomsday prep type of person, or someone who is up to no good. One of my last years at church camp when I was a teenager, I got a good scare and learned a good life lesson. I was 14, and my friend Tyler and I had snuck out of our cabin after lights out time. We didn't plan to go far, just a short walk around the campgrounds. We wanted to explore a little, talk about whatever was on our minds, and maybe see if we could scare each other. We were bored. We had spent the whole week at camp doing all the usual stuff like hiking, swimming, and the evening campfires. But that night, we felt like doing something different. We didn't realize how dumb it was until it was too late. We left our cabin quietly, trying not to wake anyone, and walked down the path towards the woods behind the camp. The camp was isolated, with no houses for miles, no streetlights, just trees and a couple of small buildings scattered around. We knew the camp pretty well, but we had never tried to navigate it in the pitch dark. We wandered for what felt like a while, just talking and laughing in the dark. We figured we'd make it back before anyone noticed that we were gone. But when we turned around to head back, we realized the camp didn't look the same. The trail we had followed into the woods didn't seem familiar. The lights from the cabins were not where they should have been, and the shadows from the trees were deeper, like they were closing in. Tyler and I started walking faster, but it only made things worse. The more we tried to get back, the farther we seemed to get. The trail was different. It twisted and turned in ways we didn't remember. The trees looked bigger and the path narrower. It was like the woods were alive, shifting around us. We tried to retrace our steps, but it felt hopeless. By then, we were both nervous. Tyler kept insisting we'd get back, that we just needed to keep walking, but I wasn't so sure. My mind kept jumping to all the creepy stories we heard at campfires earlier in the week. You know, the usual scary stories about lost campers, strange sounds in the woods, and old legends nobody really believes but still makes you uneasy. After about an hour, we stopped. The woods were thick, and the moonlight barely cut through the branches. There was an eerie silence, like everything was holding its breath. That's when we heard something, a noise far off in the distance. It sounded like footsteps, with the crunching of leaves and twigs breaking. Someone was walking, but not in a normal way. It was like they were dragging their feet. We didn't say anything, but we both knew that we had to get out of there. We started walking again, only this time it was with a sense of urgency. It felt like we had to get back before whatever was back there caught up with us. Finally, we saw one of the camp cabin's lights, faint but visible through the trees. We moved towards it quickly, trying not to trip over roots or rocks in the dark. We finally broke through the trees and went back onto the main path, right in front of the main campfire area. By the time we got back to our cabin, we didn't say a word to anyone. Nobody knew we had been gone. I'm not sure what happened out there in the woods that night, but I know we both felt something wasn't right. It sounds fake, but it was the weirdest sensation ever. It felt like the woods were changing constantly, somehow trying to keep us trapped out there. The weirdest part of the whole night was that I had my watch out there with me, and according to my watch, we had been out there for at least an hour and a half, maybe even 2 hours. I wasn't sure the exact time we had left, but I know it was for sure over an hour. However, when we got back to our cabin and saw the clocks there, only half an hour had passed. After that, we never went exploring in the dark again at church camp.